Often the fear of getting bad news keeps us from getting the medical attention we need, but it's so much better to get checked and know if there's anything to worry about or not. Hi, Larry Mueller here. So glad to have you along today on the Ideas Network. We're going to talk about head and neck cancer to begin our show today, how a two-minute exam could save your life. Our guests, we have a couple of guests for you, Rachel Kammer, who is a senior speech pathologist with the UW-Madison School of Medicine and Public Health. And Rachel, great to have you back. Thanks Hi. For taking time to be with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
With us as well, Dr. Bradley Munns, who is a fellow in head and neck surgery in the Department of Otolaryngology at the UW-Madison School of Medicine and Public Health. And Dr. Munns, thank you for coming as well.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Appreciate it very, very much. How common, Rachel, is head and neck cancer in the U.S.?
Well, last year there were 109,000 people diagnosed with head and neck cancer in the U.S.
That's a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And at Dr. Munns, at what age typically? Is this older or younger?
Typically between the fifth and sixth decades, we are seeing a lot of younger patients with the emergence of some viruses and other early age cancers due to those viruses, but usually between the fifth and sixth decades are the most common.
And the survival rates now are
still really high if it's caught early.
Yeah, it's wonderful that we can actually have more than 80% cure rates.
Definitely. With treatments and with surgeries, radiation, chemotherapy, it's definitely a curable disease.
Do we have causes or at least risk factors for head and neck cancer?
Definitely. The most common being smoking tobacco and also chewing tobacco. Also, alcohol use are the two most common causes of head and neck cancers. Genetic risk factors can also be one of those risks. And also, as I mentioned, some viruses, human papillomavirus, is also a risk factor.
Mm. Talking with Dr. Bradley Munns and Rachel Kammer about identifying and treating head and neck cancer. You may know someone who's been affected. Maybe you've been affected by head or neck cancer. Love to hear from you and your experiences. Is it something that you feel like you know enough about? Spot the warning signs? Well, we'll talk about some of those warning signs, too. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234 with your questions or comments or experiences. You can also email us at talk@wpr.org or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. You can post a question or a comment there, and certainly we'd love to hear from you. Nancy in Milwaukee up with a comment. Nancy, hi, thank you for calling.
Good morning. I am now 81 years old, and I've been diagnosed with Barrett's throat for probably over 20 years, and therefore I've been on one or another of the proton pump inhibitors. Now, I would desperately like to not take this particular medicine, and so I'm wondering, first of all, if I would have one of those ablative procedures which would eliminate those cells in my throat, would I still have to take the pump inhibitor to prevent the reflux? And I'd like to know also what you know about this new internal bracelet that's put around the sphincter to prevent the backlash of acids. And I'm also wondering what, in your estimation, is the percentage of people with Barrett's who do go on to have cancer?
Mm-hmm.
Thanks for those questions. Definitely, Barrett's esophagus does increase your risk for esophageal cancer. There are different types of procedures to reduce that surgically with that sleeve, as you mentioned, and also a fundoplication where they can wrap some of the tighten that sphincter surgically. Unfortunately, there's always risks for any type of surgeries. Those are something to discuss with your physician, and also to discuss with your physician the use of those medications, the proton pump inhibitors, to discuss with him or her about the risk and benefits of using those medications, how long you should be on those, and when to take those. As for the incidence of esophageal cancer based on Barrett's, I'm not quite up to date with those numbers, but it is a risk factor that we're aware of, and definitely something to keep up with your physician and follow up with them.
So Nancy's been dealing with this though for 20 years. I mean, it's a tough thing to have to deal with for 20 years, but on the other hand, here she is 20 years later, still going strong from the sound of it.
Definitely. And I think close follow-ups definitely help with that.
Thanks, Nancy, for calling. Appreciate it. Connie in Portage, your turn. Thank you for calling. Hi.
Oh, thanks for taking my call. I have a question about nicotine and the chewing tobacco. What does that do to the oral cavity? And that I have a son who, in college, playing baseball, and now he's in his 50s, I think. He can't seem to get rid of it. And I was wondering what that would do to his oral cavity.
Nicotine, unfortunately, is a very addictive medication, different addictive substance, and it's very difficult to get rid of it. Unfortunately, it does cause a lot of irritation in the mucosa, the lining of the oral cavity and the pharynx, and that chronic irritation with those chemicals does increase its chance for oropharyngeal cancers, such as squamous cell cancers. It's very something to follow up with your physician, look for oral screenings, make sure there's no changing in the lining of those, because those chemicals in there can cause those cancers to arise.
Yeah. Has he been involved at all in the smoking cessation programs,
yes,
Connie?
And he's tried the patches, and he can't seem to quit. I don't know. I quit smoking, and my husband quit smoking, but our son can't seem to quit the chewing tobacco. But he said his doctor told him that one chew is like four cigarettes. Do you think that's true?
Definitely any form of tobacco is going to do that. I'm not aware of any how it compares, but it does increase your risk.
Yeah,
he's, well, the thing that Dr. Mike Fiore has always said when he comes on the show, who directs the smoking cessation program at the UW, is for most people it takes them several times to quit. I mean, they have a lot of people start and they quit, they start up again, they quit, and sometimes it's 6-8 times, but you need to be encouraging him to keep trying.
Definitely.
Thank you, Connie. Good luck.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Appreciate the call. You can join in, too, by the way, with your questions or comments at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Love to hear from you. Albert in Milwaukee, thank you for calling. Hi.
Yes, hi. I was curious to know, I heard somewhere that the definition of a cure is like, if it doesn't come back in so many years, it's considered a cure, even though it does come back after that? Is that true? And what is the definition of cure? That's sort of a, if mm-hmm. that definition is true, I don't know how you can call it a cure.
Okay. Rachel, do you want to take that?
Well, I think that different physicians have different definitions of the word cure. I think mm-hmm. some physicians would never want to use the word cure because with cancer, we just can never be sure. Cancer can be microscopic, and it's something that we can't detect, but it may still be there. I think a lot of our physicians like to use the term no evidence of disease instead of using the word cure, just because there is always that small chance. So you have anything to add?
And for the number of years, usually 3 to 5 years, and most cancers do recur within 1 or 2 years. And if you've gone longer than 5 years, a lot of physicians like that number.
Yeah, there you go. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. I have a friend with neck cancer who's 3 years now gone by without a recurrence. So he's a pretty happy guy right now. Of course, you never know. It always come back, but 3 years out, you got to feel a whole lot better than when you were 1 year out.
Yep.
For sure. Will in Madison, hi, thanks for calling.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having this conversation. Very timely. I'm actually just driving back from Fond du Lac, where I just met with my father and mother. We had an ENT appointment today, and he was just recently diagnosed with oral cancer on the base of the tongue. And we're meeting with the radiologist later on this week to talk about treatment, and I was just wondering, either from providers' perspectives or people who've gone through radiation in the past, strategies for support to family members or loved ones going through radiation treatment. Any suggestions?
Okay.
Well, I can tell you that radiation for base of tongue cancer is not going to be easy, and your father will need a lot of support to get through it. Some of the challenges that he'll be dealing with as he goes through radiation are difficulty eating, pain and soreness in his mouth and throat, dry mouth, and just other issues, fatigue, weight loss. And so certainly a lot of support from family will be needed to get him through it.
Mm.
Helpful.
Yeah.
I should say, I can go on and just say one of the most important issues and the one that I'm involved with most is eating and swallowing while you're going through treatment. Because of the side effects that I just mentioned, particularly pain, dry mouth, changes in taste, many people have difficulty getting enough calories while they're going through treatment because they just don't feel like eating. And so weight loss can be an issue, and some people will require a feeding tube to be placed during treatment just so that they can get enough nutrition. And so sometimes that's necessary, but it is still important that patients do try to keep eating while they're going through treatment, even if they do have the feeding tube, because there is a long-term risk of having a change in your ability to swallow if you don't swallow throughout radiation. So even if your father ultimately gets a feeding tube, one way for you to support him would be to urge him to continue to eat something every day to keep his swallow mechanism working.
And are there types of...
And it sounds like softer foods, too, does it?
Yeah, that's yeah. What my question was.
Yeah.
I was going to ask, what kinds of food?
Exactly. Softer foods will be easier for him to swallow just because of the pain and the sore throat.
So bananas, soups, maybe?
Yeah, those are all good ideas. Bananas, soups, pasta, oatmeal, yogurt, those kinds of soft things that'll go down nice and easy.
Mm-hmm. There you go. Good luck, Will.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah, I appreciate your call very much. Talking today about identifying and treating head and neck cancer with our two guests, Rachel Kammer, who is a senior speech pathologist with the UW-Madison School of Medicine and Public Health, and also with Dr. Brad Mons, who is a fellow in head and neck surgery in the Department of Otolaryngology at the University of Wisconsin-Madison School of Medicine and Public Health. Again, you can join in at 1-800-642-1234. I'm Larry Mueller. Judith Sears-Poisson, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. So happy to have you listening in on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here with my two guests, Rachel Kammer and Dr. Bradley Mons, talking about identifying and treating head and neck cancer, and looking forward to hearing your questions and comments too at 800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. I'm wondering, we haven't talked about signs and symptoms. Can we visit about those for head and neck cancer?
Definitely. Some of the signs and symptoms to look out for head and neck cancer are persistent sores in the mouth. These sores either don't heal over a few weeks or they actually increase in size. Those are the things to watch out for. Also pain, either in the mouth or the throat when they swallow. It changes in your voice, such as hoarseness, coughing up blood, also lumps in your neck that get larger or don't go away. Those are definitely things to look for. And also, lastly, weight loss or changes in your swallowing, difficulty swallowing foods or liquids. Those are the most common signs and symptoms.
Yeah. A friend of mine had what he thought might have been the start of a pimple, and it just was back there and didn't go away, and finally went in, and sure enough, it was cancer. And he's the person who's 3 years out now, so... He's done well, and I think he got in there early enough that they were able to make some progress against it. Kim in La Crosse, it's your turn. Thanks for calling.
Thanks for having me on.
Sorry.
I have a question. I'm probably 15 months out from diagnosis and treatment for base of tongue, and one of the things that I think had most difficulty with is prior to initiating therapy, I had teeth removed, which I don't think is uncommon in the treatment of this, anything that looked questionable or had excessive fillings in, they removed. I was fortunate in that it was just three, but they are my, you know, bottom molars, which makes chewing difficult, which then leads to issues with nutrition. And I have found it to be a somewhat controversial subject when you go to talk to your providers about their opinion on dental implants. And I'm just wondering what your opinion might be on that.
That's a great question. I'm assuming you were treated with radiation?
Correct. 7 weeks of radiation and 2 rounds of chemotherapy.
Definitely patients that have gone through radiation for head and neck cancers definitely are risks for a disease called osteoradionecrosis that usually occurs after dental implants. And so definitely your physicians are right that people that have been treated with radiation do have concern for getting dental implants because they can have that complication afterwards, and it's something to talk with your providers about and to weigh those risks of that. So there are other alternatives, dental braces and bridges that and also dentures that can be discussed.
Good luck, Kim. Thank you very much for calling. You know, we talked a little bit about symptoms and signs, and there are some screenings. You folks have some screenings coming up. Rachel, tell us about this free oral cancer screenings.
Well, next week we'll be having at the University of Wisconsin Hospital on Friday, April 26th, 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. we'll be holding a free oral cancer screening. It's walk-in. You don't need to make an appointment. So just stop by at free parking, and it takes 5 to 10 minutes, and we'll just do a quick screen of your mouth to look for any signs of oral cancer. And if you're not in Madison, there are screenings all over Wisconsin, all over the United States, actually. If you go to the website ohancaw.org, that's Oral Head and Neck Cancer Week.
Mm-hmm.
That's what that stands for. ohancaw.org, you can find all the locations that will be holding an oral cancer screening, and it's either this week or next week. Every site has a different date chosen to hold the screening.
We have some of them listed. We'll put that up on my Facebook page. We have some listed already. The Midwest Dental offering free oral cancer screenings. Your screening, April 26th from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. in Madison at UW Hospitals and Clinics. And just to show you that it's not all that difficult and how quickly it takes. Judith last year went through a screening, and we videotaped it, and it's up on my Facebook page. So if you want to see how it's done, just go to the Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. We've got the photo of her waiting just to get checked out. So it's something that. Wow. I mean, you know, if it doesn't cost anything, it takes a couple of minutes of your time. Talk about something well worth the effort. This is certainly it. And again, free oral screening and April 26th, that's Friday, 10 to 1 in the clinics, the otolaryngology clinic at UW Hospitals and Clinics. No appointment necessary and free parking available as well, which is something I've always appreciated about going to UW Hospitals myself. The fact that parking's right there and it's free.
And when you get to the hospital, there'll be people in the front guiding you to the right place. So show up and we will get you to the right place for the screening.
And Kelly in Spring Grove, Illinois, it's your turn. Thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi, Larry. I just wanted to comment on the dangers of smokeless tobacco. My dad died of head and neck cancer at the age of 62, and he had used smokeless tobacco on and off, mostly on, since he was maybe 20 years old or so.
Yeah.
And it was a horrendous, horrible illness. He was otherwise a healthy person. He took care of himself. It was just something he could not give up. He was treated at Loyola in Chicago by a top head and neck surgeon, And he told us that smokeless tobacco is more addictive than cigarettes. Whether that's true or not, I do not know. But I'll never forget sitting in the waiting room for doctor visits with my parents and seeing all the men sitting in the waiting room with just portions of their cheeks and their neck cut out. It is horrendous. And maybe 62 sounds old for a college kid playing baseball using smokeless tobacco, but it's not. It's not. My dad missed so much with grandchildren that he never got to meet, all just because of smokeless tobacco. If your kids are using it, whether they're teenagers or grown-ups, help them quit. If they cannot quit, they need to have an oral checkup frequently, because if they catch it, they can remove it. But it's a killer, and it's horrendous. And I just wanted to make sure that your previous caller that had called about her college-age son heard this. It's horrendous.
Kelly, that was a very eloquent statement. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Rachel, a comment from you?
Oh, I just think that was an excellent story to insert here. It's true. There are really people that are diagnosed with head neck cancer can have, you know, very large surgeries and be quite impaired with speech and swallowing. And so that's why we're doing these screenings, to try to catch it early and spare people those experiences.
Thank you,
Absolutely.
Kelly.
Absolutely. And don't be afraid. My father knew something was wrong. He put it off. He thought he had an issue with the tooth. He actually came into the office to see my husband, who's a dentist, and he diagnosed the problem.
Mm.
It was very tragic. So please quit and discourage smokeless tobacco and get checked. Thank you.
Thank you, Kelly.
Thank you very much.
I think, Kelly, maybe you saved somebody's life today. I hope so. I hope your comments are what caused somebody to go in and come to the UW maybe for the free oral cancer screening on April 26th or one of the other places around the country, around the state. Emmy and Madison, thank you so much for calling. Hello.
Hi. I want to just offer my experience as well as a case of an example of why you should get checked if you think something's wrong, even if you don't have any of the usual risk factors. I was diagnosed with cancer of the parotid gland when I was 27 years old, and if I had known to ask for specialists when I thought something was wrong, I could have been diagnosed up to 2 years earlier, and by the time they realized that it was cancer, it was unfortunately at stage four, and I probably could have avoided a lot of the suffering and treatment that I went through because it took so long to get diagnosed.
Wow. Comments?
Definitely. Any lumps or bumps, some of the symptoms that we talked about earlier, soreness in your throat when you swallow and changing your voice, are things to watch out for. And if you visit a physician and you don't feel like you had a good enough evaluation, you want a second opinion, definitely go seek out another specialist, another physician that can look at you. Because those things, sometimes it takes two or three sets of eyes. Our team at University of Wisconsin definitely has medical oncologists, radiation oncologists, speech and swallow therapists, the ENT physicians. And there are a lot of different physicians that we all work together as a team that discuss those patients that have those types of symptoms and findings, that we all work together. So definitely get other opinions if any of those are bothering you.
Emmy, thank you.
Well, I had several primary care physicians tell me that the lump was a cyst, and I didn't demand to see an ENT until I was noticing some problems with my facial nerve. I couldn't smile normally, and so I insisted upon an ENT, and she knew right away what it was. So as for a specialist, definitely.
Yep. Good. You've got to be your own advocate sometimes. You need to do that. You know your own body. And as you say, Emmy, the sooner you get treatment, the better your chances of full recovery, and the less suffering that you might have to go through in terms of treatment. Thanks again. Diana in Waukesha, let's turn to you next. Thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. I am wondering if digestive enzymes could cause cancer, especially the stronger protein digesters with ingredients like pepsin and hydrochloric acid. I'm just curious about that. I imagine if you follow directions, it might be okay, but I'm really not, you know, informed about that.
Yeah, sure. Dr. Mons?
Definitely. Our body makes natural digestive enzymes such as pepsin, also hydrochloric acid, to help us digest our foods. And most of the time our body works the way it should and keeps those in the stomach lining. But unfortunately, sometimes that those substances can creep up into your esophagus and cause inflammation in that area that can increase your risk for head and neck cancers. And so they definitely can cause our risk factors that we know of. And there's medications and surgeries to help reduce that from reaching those areas that it's not supposed to be, but they definitely still can.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, Diana. Alan in Menominee, hello.
Hello, Larry. I just picked up the conversation when you were halfway through talking about the importance of nutrition and the problems that people have with swallowing and whatnot. And that subject really hit close to home because I'm a month out from my finishing up my treatments for a nasal pharyngeal carcinoma. And I didn't hear it mentioned, but what I was prescribed and it helped me quite a bit was what they called at my cancer center a magic mouthwash. And it was a combination of lidocaine and Maalox. And it would often, I'd have to often do like two or three treatments during every meal, but it really helped getting the food down.
Yep, wow. That's something we commonly prescribe at UW, too, and it's just a topical anesthesia that you can swish and swallow and help to take some of the pain away in your mouth and throat and help you to eat with less discomfort. So I'm glad that helped you and you were able to get through your treatment using that.
And the feeding tube was an option at the beginning, but I elected not to just for the reasons that you discussed about the problems with the swallowing. I would say if anybody doesn't have weight to lose, that they ought to really consider the feeding tube, because I know I lost 80 pounds during my treatment, and
wow.
I think being malnutrition, you know, kind of affected my recovery time and how long it took me to bounce back from it.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's, you know, there's pros and cons to the feeding tube, and that would be, you know, some of the reasons to go for it is just to have better nutrition and helps you to get through the treatment, helps you recover faster, like you said. You know, good for you for getting through it without a feeding tube. From my standpoint, I'm always concerned about the swallowing. So,
right.
Yeah. I always applaud people that can get through it without the feeding tube. And
Are you getting some of that weight back, Alan?
Yep. I lost 80 pounds during the treatment. I was down to 150, and I'm back to 161. So. And that's been in the course of maybe 2.5 weeks. So, it's something you can definitely come back from. But, you know, the more you maintain while you're getting your treatments, the better off you're going to be.
Yeah.
Well, congrats on finishing.
Yeah, thanks.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Alan. I appreciate your call.
You bet.
Appreciate it very much. You can join in, too, by the way. We finally have open lines. We get you on fairly quickly at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page. I'm going to check the page out and see if anybody's posted here yet. I haven't looked. I got to look. You can go to the Larry Mueller Show for that. And that Facebook page is right there. Terry and Hammond, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. My mother died of esophageal cancer.
Uh-huh. Hello? Yes.
I'm sorry. It was quiet. She had no symptoms when she went into the doctor. The only thing she had was that she chewed her food and it would come back up just as the way she had tried swallowing it. And when she got to the doctor, of course, it was stage 3, and she only lived a little over a year, year and a half later. She had no symptoms, no heartburn. She ate late meals after chores at night, and she did drink beer. What would someone look for before it got so bad as that? And that's all she had to go by.
Definitely sorry to hear about your loss with your mother. Some of the most common symptoms with esophageal cancers are what we call a globus sensation, like something stuck in your throat. The esophagus stretches all the way from the back of your mouth all the way into through the chest and into where it empties out of the stomach. So depending on where the tumor is, it will change those symptoms. If it's higher in the neck, people feel like there's something stuck back there and constantly clearing their throat. And if it's a little bit down lower, they might not have that sensation, but they'll have reflux or coughing up some food at times after, you know, hours after the meal has been eaten because of that. Also, weight loss is another big one.
Sorry, thanks. Just,
thanks.
Since you said it was hereditary, I thought someone should find out.
Yeah. Thank you very much for calling. Debbie in Middleton. Thank you. Hello.
Hi there. I'm just calling because I have a friend who's experiencing this cancer at the base of the tongue. And I just wanted to encourage, I don't want to invade his privacy, but I just wanted to encourage people to persist when you know something's wrong. Because he went to his general practitioner for a couple different visits, and they treated him for a sinus infection, and he complained of jaw pain, and he saw somebody about his teeth, and he went back, he went to an ENT person, and they too took an x-ray of his sinuses and said, well, those are clear, but here, let's try another antibiotic. And it was actually a chiropractor that he went to as kind of a last resort that felt like something wasn't right with his neck and sent him back to an ENT. But he went through numerous appointments and just persisted because he knew something was wrong and nothing was fixing it. So I just want people to know they need to persist when they have a gut feeling.
Yeah, I don't think you're going to get any disagreement. Thanks, Debbie. It's a good story to tell. Well, it's a terrible story, but it's a good one for us to hear. And both of our guests today are shaking their heads. Yeah, this is absolutely, you need to be an advocate for yourself. Absolutely. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. And again, I want to remind everybody before I forget about it that there's a free oral cancer screening going on this week and next at various places. Our guests today, Rachel Cameron and Dr. Brad Mons, are going to be involved in free oral cancer screening next week, Friday, April 26th, from 10 in the morning to 1 in the afternoon. So 3 hours at the clinic at the University of Wisconsin Hospitals and Clinics on Highland Avenue in Madison. No appointment necessary. There's free parking available right there. You can go in. You'll get at the door, there'll be people to make sure that you get to the right spot. It's not going to take a long time. It just takes a couple minutes to get checked. And what a difference it can make in your life, whether you do it here at the University of Wisconsin Hospitals and Clinics or somewhere else. It's being done around the state and around the country this week and next. Go on to our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. We post places where you can go if you're not in the Madison area, where you can go to get the free screenings. And we had a lot of callers still online. You mentioned earlier, Dr. Mons, that there's a lot of cooperation that goes on at University Hospital. So when somebody goes in there, you're going to get a lot of different eyes looking at
Definitely.
You.
Definitely. We meet once a week. We have a head and neck tumor board that all the specialists meet together and look over the x-rays and the biopsy results and discuss different needs of different patients. So we have a lot of specialists that meet at least once a week to discuss those.
And the treatment and the surgeries, I think there's been a lot of, I mean, there's some terrible surgeries that have to be done, but there's been a lot of improvement, I think, even in over the last 10, 15 years in those surgical procedures.
Definitely. There's a handful of surgical procedures you can do, depending on where the tumor is, different radiation approaches, different medications for chemotherapies, a lot of modalities that can be used for those treatments.
And then you got great people like Rachel here who if you need some help, a senior speech pathologist with UW, you're going to be stepping in and others like you to help people get through that.
Yeah, I'm involved with the rehabilitation after surgery or during radiation, helping people with speech and swallowing as they recover from their treatment.
Yeah. So we got one piece of advice at the end here as we wind up.
Don't be afraid. Come in, visit us. A few minutes can save your life and definitely catch these tumors when they're small and easily treatable.
Yeah.
And I just want to add that, even if you're not a drinker or smoker, you're still at risk for head and neck cancer from a viral source. Human papillomavirus in particular is emerging as one of the major causes of head and neck cancer. So everyone is at risk and it wouldn't hurt to get screened.
Yeah. So get that done. You got this week and next week at different places. Certainly next week on Friday, April 26th, if you're in the Madison area, come to the UW Hospitals and Clinics on Highland Avenue between 10 and 1. Somebody's going to be there, a professional, to check you out and say, hey. Hopefully they'll say, hey, great. You know, you're fine. Or they'll say, oh, you know what? We need to look a little more carefully. And who knows? Could save your life. So my recommendation, go and do it. And my big thanks to our guest today. Thank you so much. I hope we have a chance to do this again.
Thanks for having us, Larry.
Appreciate it very much. Rachel Kammer is a senior speech pathologist with the UW-Madison School of Medicine and Public Health. Dr. Brad Mons, fellow in head and neck surgery in the Department of Otolaryngology at the UW-Madison School of Medicine and Public Health. Good to know that we've got some simple screenings that can save lives. Coming up, we're going to talk about another way to save lives. That's through organ and tissue donation. April is National Donate Life Month, and we'll find out how important it is to increase the number of donors available. So stay with us right here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.